Horror movies teach us that you never, ever go into the basement alone without a flashlight. Horror movies teach us that if you want to survive, you need to live a virtuous life. Horror movies teach us that you shouldn't buy haunted real estate, no matter how good the deal. Just don't. Horror movies teach us that you should never, ever split up from the group. Horror movies teach us that evil is an undeniable presence in our lives. And horror movies teach us that fear is a lifelong condition, one that must be conquered so it will not consume us. Ever since I became a Unitarian Universalist, I've been puzzled by the lack of discourse around topics of fear and evil. Initially, I attributed this desire of many UU congregations to distance themselves from a more traditional fire and brimstone brand of religious discourse. Fear, after all, is often a symbolic tool of the more patriarchal, obey-at-all-costs mindset that some institutions use to cement social conservatism. Fear has taken a front seat in much of our political discussion these days. And fear is a value that is aligned with the sort of political power that we find repugnant. Machiavelli tells us that it's ideal for a leader to both be feared and respected. But in the event that the leader can't have both, fear is the more ideal choice because it is a constant of the human condition. So perhaps it's logical that modern UUs avoid talking about fear and evil and spend our time thinking about how to fight it instead. But constantly fighting a faceless presence or an ideology is tiring. Lately, fear and evil have felt like constant companions. Dealing with them is draining. And this feeling couples with shame, shame at admitting exhaustion or ignoring the problems that cause fear and doubt. The most important way I've come to deal with the existence of fear and evil is through horror movies. Certainly not all of them. Some of them are gross and distasteful to me, just like works of any genre don't work for all fans of that genre. But quite a few do work for me. Horror films have allowed me to deal with my fears in a safe, comforting setting, and spiritually, they have been invaluable. They help me reconcile the omnipresence of fear and evil. As Reverend Owen Toll says, evil isn't a problem to be solved so much as a reality to be faced. Ignoring evil and fear can prove to be a grave mistake that has personal and political implications alike. According to Philip Tallon, an academic well-versed in both horror film and theology, horror as a genre is worth taking seriously because of how well it can inform and enlighten our vision of the world by reminding us of our own inner moral frailty and by forcing us to take seriously the moral reality of evil. In other words, horror forces us to reassess our worldview and the privilege inherent in our particular worldview's existence in the first place. I want to take us back to one of the scariest, most purely terrifying times San Diego has ever faced. And I did not plan for this to be the 10th anniversary of that, but it has worked out that way date-wise. So I'm referring, of course, to the 2007 fires. I suddenly found myself with an unwanted week off work. The air smelled like ash, and a thin film of it coated our windows and cars. My parents took in their good friends whose house was directly threatened out in Poway. A lot of whiskey was consumed, and the TV was on constantly. None of the news was good, and it felt like we were all waiting for a collective shoe of dread to drop. One of my friends was so frightened that the fires would leap over the 15 and come to her apartment in UCSD housing that she and her boyfriend got on a Southwest flight and went to San Francisco to wait until it was over. She literally said, "Text me when it's okay." On the Friday of that week, David and I decided we'd had enough of the tension around us and it would be all right to get away for a short time. We went to the movies and saw 30 Days of Night, a horror film in which a pack of vampires terrorizes a small Alaska town because of, you guessed it, the prolonged nighttime of winter. When we came back from the movies, my mother asked us what we'd seen, and when we told her, her face contorted in something like disgust and surprise. Sorry, Mom. Why would you see that? She asked. It took me a long time to think up an answer to that question. Why had we wanted to see something scary when there was plenty of real-life terror all around us? I thought of the movie theater, how it was all dark and cool inside. I thought of the smell. It wasn't ash and whiskey, but it was fake butter and stale sugar. I thought about the audience we sat with. We'd all jumped at the same moments, laughed at more than a few, and been united around the common cause of a story. The movie itself was not particularly good. And I mean, seriously, don't go out and rent this after this talk. I don't want to be held responsible for poor quality movie viewing time. But more empowering, I mean, it was scary in as much as vampires have any cultural capital left. But more empowering was the part of the story where the remaining survivors came together to fight back against the menace, even in the face of tremendous odds. We walked out of that theater feeling lighter on our feet, talking about what our vampire fighting strategies would be, and comfortable with the idea that we had survived that secondhand trauma and let the bad feelings about it go. Viewing a horror film is about purging toxic emotions that fear and evil induce. The idea of that communal viewing experience leading to a collective exhalation of bad or morally suspect beliefs dates all the way back to Greek tragedy in Aristotle's work Poetics. Aristotle is primarily interested in the forms of tragedy, with a capital T, or the dramatic works of his time, such as Sophocles' Oedipus the King. However, there is much about what he says that is relevant to us today as readers and viewers. Tragedy, he says, is an imitation of an action that is serious, complete, and of a certain magnitude, in the form of action, not of narrative, through pity and fear affecting the proper purgation of these emotions. This purgation, or purging, the act of purging, this word is often left untranslated as catharsis, and it's something that Aristotle deems necessary for a successful work of drama. This structure is present in just about every narrative form, fiction or nonfiction. The narrative introduces us to the heroes, then adds an antagonist, and builds up the tension as fast as possible so as to stretch out suspense and excitement. At the end, you breathe a sigh of relief that the problem or conflict has been solved in some way, and that's catharsis. Catharsis leads to closure, which is something we all crave. Without that catharsis, toxic emotions such as fear, anxiety, and ambivalence build up inside us, making it difficult and sometimes even impossible to move forward. As someone who's grappled with anxiety and depression for most of her life, catharsis is an especially important part of my spiritual care. I know I'm not alone in this. Our lives are not tidy little set-piece dramas where difficult emotions like fear are dealt with on an easy, obvious moral lesson basis that resolves itself in 22 or 42 minutes. It is comforting to deal with frightening, messy emotions in a space where our control is paramount to the experience rather than the experience controlling us. After all, if we see the scariest thing that could happen, we can prepare ourselves for anything. Even horror novelist Stephen King acknowledges that sometimes the worst has been faced, and it wasn't so bad after all. We have gone through our toxic emotions and survived them, and now there is room on our plate for facing the true problems in front of us. Depression, anxiety, and similar disorders have a tendency to shroud their sufferer's mind in limits, to be stuck at one belief in frequently frightening and diminishing ways. But within the confines of a fictional, however horrific space, there is a designated time and socially acceptable way to face that worst and throw off those limits. The thrill of seeing a horror movie protagonist, especially a woman, defeat something evil is like no other for me. There are more than a few of them who I think about in times of trouble and fear. Ripley from Alien, Eleven in Stranger Things, five more days, people, five more days. And the list goes on and on. If she can do it, then I can too. A while back, David and I watched a movie called Hush, one of the most terrifying and intense pieces of filmmaking I've ever seen. In it, a deaf-mute woman who lives alone in an isolated house finds herself stalked by an intruder who's relentlessly bent on breaking into that house and killing her. Even though the odds are stacked against her, she refuses to give up and fights him tooth and nail, ultimately triumphing, but only after great cost. The camera lingers on her bloody face as the end credits start to play, and she fixes the viewer with a fierce, unflinching stare, as if she's about to ask a question. Would you have done what I did? Could you? As David and I turn off the TV, I found myself in the middle of a small panic attack over what we just experienced. It had been overwhelming to see a story that mirrored the way I felt about depression and anxiety, that they were unstopping and unstoppable. But to see another person stand up to them like that, it was sobering and inspiring. I hadn't framed my struggles in this way before, and the day after we saw the film, I felt lighter on my feet again. If she had survived, then so could I. If she can fight back, then so can we. When it comes to horror movies, though, opinions tend to differ. Not everyone looks to them as a source of strength and meaning. Some people decry them for the depiction of violence and sadism, and others rightly point out that some films do legitimize violence against women, minorities, and other groups. Kenneth Turan, film critic for the LA Times, recently wrote an editorial in which he explained his decision to stop reviewing all horror films. He says that frightening images affect him too greatly and linger for too long in his psyche, and he is certainly not alone in this worldview. Some people in this very audience might be thinking, oh, I will never watch a horror movie like that. And that's okay. You can't unsee things. And I'm sure all of us have learned this the hard way, one way or another, especially with the advent of the internet. And if horror movies just aren't your thing, then probably no sermon is going to convince you otherwise. But deliberately turning your back on an entire genre strikes me as closed-minded, and it ignores all the positive and thought-provoking elements of horror film. You can also choose what you watch and avoid truly shocking works if you're willing to spend a few minutes doing simple research. The recent movie Get Out is a good example of a story that has implications that reach far beyond simple shock and fear. It is undeniably frightening and violent, but the argument it makes about the pervasiveness of white privilege and the violence of denial of the existence of that privilege is well worth listening to. If we traveled back in time and visited ancient Greece, would there be audience members who cringed at the violence and sexual themes of Oedipus the King? Certainly. But the themes of this play, like the consequences of denial, coupled with human beings' obsessive need to know, likely captivated its audience, just as it still captivates us today. I often tell my students that Oedipus the King is an episode of Maury Povich that just hasn't been on television yet. Terrifying stories have value and meaning beyond just simple scares, and dismissing them all denies the pleasure of entertainment and the worth of exploring ideas that make you uncomfortable. My original title for this talk was "It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year." I adore Halloween. I love seeing children and adults dress up in costume that show us aspirations or sides of themselves they would normally never show us, or taking control of scary things by being them. I enjoy the obvious effort and love that is put into haunted houses and attractions. I like candy. And I really like that this holiday is one of the few times where we're expected to talk about our fears, even if it's just in the context of laughing at them. But why do we stop at just this one time of year? As Halloween approaches, terrifying images are all around us. Turning on the news, even just for a moment, shows us horrifying realities for friends, loved ones, and our fellow human beings. Having all the tools you need to put those fears aside and move forward is vital. As much as we love it or hate it, fear is a force that gives us meaning. And the more ways we are prepared to stand up to it, to fight it, the better. Take the things you fear and watch a film about them. You control when it starts and finishes, who you watch it with and where. Why not have a good time while you're facing your worst imaginings? Facing my fears and anxieties has only led me to personal growth. If all of us took steps to lessen the grip the horrific has on us, then imagine how much we could get done. May it be so, and blessed be.